From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of October, 2018. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's numbers with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and the impact they have had on the marketplace so far. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, that with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, I'll update you on all the happenings in the agricultural world as it relates to news for the afternoon. And we'll hear about the cash grain market from Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan, and thanks so much for being with us today.
You're more than welcome, Todd.
Well, let's first go through some of the numbers as they came from the United States Department of Agriculture this morning. It now says, as of the first of this month, that we have a corn crop that is 180.7 bushels to the acre nationwide. That's down 6/10 of a bushel per acre. Our production at 14,778,000, down about 49 million bushels, and that put the season's average cash price at $3.50, and we'll have a carryout of 1.813 billion bushels by the time we get to the end of the year. Soybean production at 4.69 billion, down about 30 million, and the yield there at 53.1, that's up 3/10 of a bushel. Average price at $8.60 for the year, though it was a really wide price range with a top end up at 975 or something like that, a long ways up there. Anyway, what'd you think of the numbers as you saw them and the impact they've had on the trade?
Well, I think the key point is that the crop stopped getting bigger. Now, in soybeans case, I guess we ended up with less harvested acres. In corn's case, we came in with a little smaller yield. But I think the key here is the crop stop getting bigger. Now, that doesn't mean, I guess, that the USDA can't come back in November with a minor revision. But I suppose any major revisions now will probably wait until the January final after they get a chance to look at the December 1st stocks numbers. And then they'll kind of back out of that. And we'll see where we're at on total production. So I think what we know on supply right now is probably what we're going to know until we get into the January final. I don't look for any shockers on November. However, there could be, knowing the USDA. But I think any big numbers or big changes are probably going to occur on January. So the fact that we're not getting any, the crop's not getting any bigger, allowed the market to put in a pretty good day to the upside. I think it depending upon what we do tomorrow, I would like to see soybeans follow through on today's advance. If they would and happen to put in a pretty good update tomorrow going into a weekend, I think it would really go a long ways in solidifying that the seasonal low is in place. It came a couple weeks early. We're halfway through October. The only thing is, I guess I would like to see us a little further along in harvest to feel real comfortable that the worst is behind us and we're headed now higher into the spring. It's probably going to be mostly a sideways affair. But at least I think the seasonality of soybeans normally putting in a seasonal low during the first 10 days of October and rarely looking back as it moves on into the spring, I think that window is open now. We'll have to see what South America brings, but in order to really liven up the market, I guess we're going to have to find a reason to shorten up the South American crop, and then that would catch a whole bunch of people short, and then we could have a nice winter rally all the way into the spring. Corn, I like today's close in corn. I suppose out of the two commodities, corn was probably the most impressive today. We posted a solid close above the 50-day moving average. We made a new high for the move out of that 342.5 low posted on the December contract. So I think we are now in a sideways to higher trend, very similar to what soybeans have been in after it pulled out of its $8.12 low. So technically, I guess I'm friendly in the fact that it's a sideways to higher, and then it's probably going to turn mostly sideways, and then we'll see, you know, how the end of harvest goes. The big heavy rain activity has kind of slowed down harvest. It looks like we might have harvest spread out over a longer period of time than what we normally do. So we'll have to kind of see how all that plays out. But I do think the seasonalities of having a higher October finish are pretty well in place. November has a tendency to have strength during the first half, then it begins to kind of tail off, you know, as we go on in December. A lot of times December corn futures might come back and test the low, the October low during the first part of September during the heavy delivery period. And then we move on into the new year. And then we finally wait on the final nail to be put in the coffin of the 2018 crop. And then we'll start looking ahead to the 2019 crop.
What kind of experience do we have with harvesting a really wet soybean crop in the fall and the impact it has on the marketplace? Some, none? Does it change things very much?
I think I've probably forgotten more stuff than I've learned over the years.
Well, let me ask a different question in that case. I'm wondering, because we're talking about the seasonalities for soybeans, those who are harvesting soybeans maybe late and they might have a little time with the grain elevator, should they take advantage of the up moves if they come in the next couple of weeks when they're actually harvesting? Do they need to take advantage of an up move that might come sometime between now and mid-December?
I would say that you'd need, by middle part of November, it might be all over with. I don't know. A lot of times, at least my observation in election years, the market a lot of times will hold together until the election, and then after the election is over with, it has a strong tendency to have a correction. So I would say that we've got the month of October here, maybe into the first week or so of November, and then we'll have to see, you know, how the market responds, if it responds at all, to what the results of the election are, whether or not it makes any difference or not. It all depends upon the individual farmer's situation. I mean, that's what it boils down to. But this has been a pretty nice little rally compared to what everybody thought things could be, you know, a month or so ago, given the big crop estimates, and, you know, the basis levels are coming in a little bit, nothing fantastic. I talked to some cash buyers, this past week, and they're having a hard time keeping, you know, 5 to 7 days cash inventory in front of them. Farmers are fairly tight holders, so they're going to have to bring that basis in a little bit as this market maybe slides a little higher. So these could be some selling opportunities for farmers that don't want to invest in any kind of commercial storage and then get into a sideways affair and not be able to take advantage of earning carry. And the only way you can earn carry is if you start operating like an elevator. And I would not necessarily recommend that for the average farmer. I've always told farmers, if you want to be a basis trader, quit farming and go get a job with ADM or Cargill, and you'll get a desk and a phone, and you can basis trade all day long. I think these could be some selling opportunities to peel off some inventory, but I'm still too much of a seasonal guy to throw in the towel and say this thing doesn't have any upside potential as we go into the spring. I just believe the seasonalities of a new crop season, and who knows what the trade issues will be by then. Brazil hasn't got no crop guaranteed by a long shot. And even if China buys all of Brazil's beans, there's going to be demand for our beans here in the United States from the other countries. So I still want to stay generally positive long term.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, there's more pushback on the Trump administration's ethanol policy. Mr. Trump moved to expand E15 sales year-round earlier in the week, and that's been challenged publicly by oil industry and environmental groups that argue it violates the Clean Air Act, which sets limits on fuel volatility levels. The oil industry is preparing a legal challenge. Well, on the farm bill, with nothing planned for this week, it's not clear when the four principal ag leaders will meet face-to-face again. Senate Agriculture Chairman Pat Roberts told reporters Wednesday the goal is still to have a bill ready for the lame duck session. The 2014 farm bill has been expired for 10 days. Well, beyond this morning's USDA reports, the Department of Agriculture is out with some surprising soybean export figures for the first couple of months of Chinese tariffs. USDA says the first 11 months of the fiscal year ended September 30th show a 7% drop in soybean export value and 3% volume drop from the previous fiscal year. However, much of that is before punishing Chinese tariffs took effect in July and August. USDA trade economist Bryce Cook says those 2 months show surprising soybean exports.
Those totals are actually up as far as exports go to the world, 24% above what it was the previous year.
And how could that be, with U.S. soybean sales to China cut off and soybean prices down? Cook says the European Union and others are picking up the slack, though some are skeptical the EU's made a long-term commitment, especially because of the drought in the oil seed-producing areas of the Union. Former USDA trade chief in the Clinton administration, Paul Drazik, recounted in July the comments of a top EU official.
It's more of an assurance that the EU would be buying more soybeans from the U.S. than it is a commitment, because, as I understand he explained it, if the EU is buying fewer soybeans from Brazil because Brazil is shipping more to China, then it's logical to assume the EU would probably need to buy more soybeans from the U.S.
With recent exceptions of U.S. beef, Drazik says the EU is looking for a trade deal with the United States on manufactured goods, not agriculture. Still, USDA's Bryce Cook says U.S. farm exports are up overall.
For the month of August, there was about $11 billion worth of agricultural exports, which is a pretty sizable total, bigger than last August.
And with $10.4 billion in farm inputs, that left a U.S. trade surplus in ag goods for August of some $600 million. And finally today, on a related note, demand for Brazilian soybeans has grown so much that that country is now running out of the oilseed. U.S.-China trade war has pushed Beijing to rely more heavily on Brazilian soybean exports, and the South American country might now have to import soybean oil to meet the heightened demand. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, last Tuesday, President Donald Trump made a campaign trip to Council Bluffs, Iowa. There he told a very excited crowd his administration would be backing corn farmers and ethanol. Well, the president leaned into the mic and gave corn farmers a little insider news they've been clamoring to hear since USDA pronounced gasoline blended with 15% ethanol would be okay to use in all cars made since 2001.
We're a little bit early. I shouldn't say it now, but We're going with E15 year-round.
Mr. Trump is a little early. Today, E15 can be used about 9 months out of the year in much of the nation. During those other 3 months, the summer months, it's been prohibited. The U.S. EPA will need to write some rules about how to make the year-round use happen. Those will need to be approved, and clearly the oil industry will mount court challenges. If all goes well, more corn will be used to make ethanol for E15, but it won't make a difference in the balance sheets for corn, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Herwin.
Not for this year, and I'm confident not for next year.
So the E15 announcement, while a long-run win for corn ethanol, rings a little hollow. The administration's other big farm country biofuels problem is EPA's use of the small refinery exemption, or SRE. The good news here, says Illinois' Herwin, is that ethanol usage has been holding strong despite EPA letting some refineries out of the mandate to produce gasoline blended with a homegrown fuel like ethanol made from corn. However, there is a problem with oil pressed from soybeans to make biodiesel.
And the total amount of biodiesel that is needed to fill the RFS mandates because of the small refinery exemptions has probably gone down at least 10%. So there's been real demand destruction from the small refinery exemptions, but it's in biodiesel, not ethanol.
The U.S. EPA has through November to announce its final decision related to the volume of biofuels it will require in the nation's gasoline supply next year, or 2019. It may or may not include some guidance on how it expects to use the small refinery exemptions going forward. So far, it has said it will make no comment on that point. Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, Matt, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Todd.
So what'd you make of the USDA reports this morning, first off?
I'm surprised, pleasantly surprised for a change, I guess. Typically, we seem to walk away from these reports a little bit disgusted, but today was a different tune, you know. Going down to 180.7 on corn, I think, caught some people off guard. I thought all along that corn probably had less likelihood to go up than beans. But I got to be honest with you, I was dead wrong on beans. I really felt like the bean number would go up, maybe by a bushel or more. Very interesting to see both of those go down a little bit. But obviously, we still have very large crops, but it was certainly something that could maybe give us a little bit of support in here.
It's support that's been building for the corn market for some time. Can it make more of a move than the 6 cents that we added today?
You know, the interesting thing for corn, you know, you threw two really tough reports added in a row between the September supply and demand and then, looking at the quarterly stocks. Very, very rough reaction right off the bat, and then we got it all back. And then, we come in here today, and it seems to me like some of the big money players are certainly looking very close to feed grain. Does that mean that we're going to have a chance to go on higher from here? I think that we're building a case at the very least. Usually you get halfway done with harvest, and you can start thinking about kind of pulling up out of some of your lows. But this has been an interesting year, being an all-time record crop as far as yield goes in the U.S., at the same time the wool stock continues on down. So I think you've got a little bit of something for everyone here.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking time with us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having
me, Todd. Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Always great being here, Todd. I hope you're having a good day, too.
I am having a good day. Sunshine here, and I'm wondering whether that is a promise of things to come across the rest of the Midwest. They've been awfully soggy, and farmers have been waiting to get back into the field.
Yeah, you're right. The coverage of wetness is pretty amazing. No matter which period you look at, it's been wetter than normal. We can look at the Midwest over the last 7 days, 14 days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and it all tells you the exact same story. And that's that everybody is unusually wet. And so this has been taking place for a while. The good thing is that we are starting to break out of that pattern. temperatures have turned a lot colder, as you've probably noticed outside today. And as we move forward, we're going to see dry air continually push onto the south, and that will keep most of the rain outside of the Midwest. Now, before we get there, though, there is going to be a rain system moving across the southern part of the Corn Belt and points to the south from Saturday through Monday. That all occurs for a couple of different reasons, but the number one reason is that the remnant of Hurricane Sergio will eventually move through. That system has been located out in the Pacific Ocean for a while now, but is finally moving to the east. That'll affect Mexico here shortly, and then move across the southern part of the U.S. with a swath of rain. So some of these wheat areas are going to get a little wetter from southern Kansas and south before everybody turns dry. And at that point, early next week, we're going to see about 7, 10, maybe even 14 days of dryness.
How is wheat doing across the planet, by the way?
Well, outside of the U.S., it's pretty dry. If you look at the last 60 days at all these different key areas of the world, they're all kind of experiencing the same thing, which is an elevated level of dryness. Look at Argentina. Our proprietary data shows that 53% of winter wheat production in Argentina was drier than normal over the last 60 days. 66% in Australia, 66% in the EU, 67% in Russia, and 62% in Ukraine. Normally, all these numbers would be closer to 20%. So to see them all elevated and include more than half of their wheat production tells you that a lot of the world's wheat needs some rain. Now, the timing isn't exactly optimum to have big problems, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, because it's early. The crop is being planted now. It's waiting to go dormant. So it's hard to drop a lot of potential problems there. But with a dry forecast for much of the EU going forward, as well as Russia and Ukraine, this issue is more than likely going to linger here for a little bit. The only area where it won't linger would be parts of France and the UK, which is about 35% of EU wheat production. They've actually broken into a stormier pattern here very recently, and it looks like they'll start to get some more rain. Same story in Australia. Some more rain is coming up, but their wheat season is beginning to end, so the rain was really needed a while ago. But you look at the U.S., only 5% of U.S. wheat is similarly dry. So it just shows you the difference there. Most wheat in the world is dry, but not in the U.S.
Hey, one final note. Better check in on the South American soybean and, eventually corn crop.
Well, in Brazil, things are looking pretty good. We have a number of rain events coming up. Some of these rains are needed to crack open that soil and let us be able to plant. So that certainly seems to be the case going forward, especially next week. Argentina is getting a little bit dry again, but it's early. They're starting to plant that first corn crop, and having dry conditions right now isn't necessarily a big deal. There are some rains on the horizon there, but they all look pretty minor. So this will probably be a story here for the rest of the month.
Thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time.
Always great being here, Todd. Talk to you soon.
We'll talk with you again next week. That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.